welcome to another edition of Turned at a Punk. I'm your host, Damien Abraham, and once again, I am bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved in punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, this might be the best goddamn episode of this podcast ever. I have not one, but two former guests coming back for a part two, but it's almost a prequel. More on that in a second, but today's guests are Zach Blair and MVP, two people I don't think you ever thought would be on the show together, and more on that in a second. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, head over to DamienAbraham.com. There's an email address there you can use to get in touch with me at. You can also find me on various forms of social media at Left for Damien. You can also head over to Facebook.com. There's a Turned Out of Punk Facebook page. You can like that page. Send them a message. It's run by my brother, Tristan Abraham. He'll get the message to me. You can also go over to Tumblr.com and you can follow the turnedoutofpunk.tumblr.com page. And that way, if you don't use Facebook, you'll see all the stuff that we get submitted to the show that people send in and other things that we find and we post up on the Facebook page. We also post them over there on the Tumblr page. And if you would like to support this show, the best way to do that is by, well, first of all, telling all your friends. But if you use iTunes, go to iTunes, subscribe to this podcast, write a review, rate it, and that would be awesome. That really helps out this podcast. How? I still don't really know, but it does. That's what I've learned from listening to enough of these podcasts. And while you're on iTunes, you will notice that there are a lot of other adjacent podcasts to this podcast that fit in the Turned Out of Punk little universe we're creating over here. First of all, there is Turned Out of Punk Footnotes, which is run by myself and my good friend Chris O'Toole, hosted by. And each week we dissect an episode of Turned Out of Punk. This week, right now, the one that is currently up, not the one about this episode, the one that's up before this episode dropped, is a incredible super episode 100 Turned Out of Punk Footnotes special, where we're joined by David Up from Tear It Up, former guest, and our good friend and regular Footnotes contributor, Dave Martin, and we kind of go through the first 100 episodes of Turn It a Punk. Also, there is the other podcast that we do here called Clobbering Time, which is hosted by Tom Bryan and co-hosted by myself. And each week we take a look, or each week, every time we put that up, we take a look at pro wrestling. We're going to have a special one coming up this week, though. It's going to be really cool. And we dissect that genre. Oh, you can hear the Descendants are beginning their sound check in the background right now as I say this. Well, I'll tell you about all this in one second, but that explains that drumming noise that's just started that you're hearing now. But yeah, so Clobbering Time, Tom Bryan and I are going to have a special one this week. And we put them up every once in a while, but it's all about pro wrestling. The sweet, sweet science of the pro wrestling graps. And there is also another podcast, a fourth podcast right now in our little podcast family. And that podcast is, of course, Oil and Flowers, where myself and Buddha Blaze each week talk about cannabis, the sweet plant known as cannabis, or the sweet leaf, as some bands have referred to it in the past as. And so, yeah, those are the Taupe podcast family as it stands right now. So you can find all those on iTunes. You can also find those on Audio Boom. At audioboom.com, they're all there. You can also, stream them on your various music streaming services. I think they're mainly, I think it's like Spotify's got it now. Then you can find this on Spotify. So if you're listening on Spotify, welcome. And if you're not listening on Spotify, well, thank you for wherever else you're listening to the show on. Okay, I think that's about it for that. Check out Fucked Up Shows if you want to see where my band's playing at fuckedup.cc. And you would find out about all sorts of shows, including the show that I'm playing tonight, like right now, with the Descendants. I'm sitting outside. They're doing their sound check. Carl Alvarez just went back inside after a cigarette. He's looking over at me. Hey, buddy. And he's gone inside. He's probably wondering why I'm talking to myself in a van right now. Back to what actually is going on. I am backstage at the Descendants show in the parking lot, recording in our van as they are doing sound check, and I wanted you guys to all be able to hear me. It's an amazing time. Hopefully we'll have a conversation with some of those guys in the future. But right now, we're talking about the present, and the present for this show is incredible because today on the show, as I mentioned off the top, we are joined by MVP and Zach Blair. MVP, of course, is internationally famous wrestling superstar who has wrestled for WWE. He's wrestled in New Japan. He's wrestled for TNA. He's wrestled for just about everything. Oh, my phone's going off in the background. Sorry, everyone. He's wrestled for just about every promotion you can imagine. And, you know, he's a good friend of mine. And recently he came up to Toronto and he and I sat down and we were having a conversation. And I brought up a story he had told me a while ago. Don't worry, it comes up on this podcast. You'll hear the story. And I'm like, didn't you tell me something about the story? And he proceeded to say, yes, it happened backstage at a Guar concert. And I'm like, oh, Guar concert. And he's like, yeah, my friend, some guy I used to know, plays guitar in Guar. And he described this person. And I said, this person's name is Zach Blair. He said, have I told you this story before? And I said, no, that's because that's my friend, Zach Blair. And sure enough, he was talking about Zach Blair, former guest of the show. And it turns out that him and Zach had met each other way back when they were kids, when MVP, before he got sent to prison. You have to listen to the MVP episode and the Zach Blair episode before you listen to this. So if you haven't listened to those two yet, pause this one and go listen to those two, because I assure you, it will give you so much extra depth when you listen to this one. Anyway, so before MVP got sent to prison, he was shipped out to Texas in a small town just outside of Dallas. And that is where he would wind up meeting Zach and his brother Donnie, both from Hagfish, and some of their other friends, and became their friends. And oh my gosh, this episode is so nuts. It's so good. After I found all this stuff about MVP, I called Zach and reconnected the two of them because they'd been out of touch for something close to 20 years at this point. And now they're reconnected and all is right in the world. And you have a Turned Out of Punk episode to sink your teeth into. This is awesome. There's so much stuff in this episode. I'm not going to waste any more of your time rambling on about it, because I just want you guys to listen to it, because oof, you people are in for a treat. This is one for the ages. Please, people, sit back, relax, and enjoy Zach Blair and MVP. That's right, a member of Rise Against Guar and Hagfish, and a former tag team champion, and a former wrestling champion, multiple time wrestling champion, and how all their life goes, not all their life, how about one of the key points in both of their lives happens because of punk rock. So this is the episode that proved this thesis that is Turned Out of Punk. Sit back, relax, and enjoy MVP and Zach Blair on Turned Out of Punk. Oh, both you guys, thank you for coming back to me with this, because as we were just discussing off air, I was saying to you, Zach, I think before MVP, you joined us on the call, this is something that is the entire thesis of this show. Like, the entire reason I wanted to do this show was to kind of expose these kind of connections that exist within the punk world and punk community type thing. And I just had to bring us all together once again, because unfortunately I erased the first time we discussed this, to discuss it again and tell...
Damien, you're actually responsible for reuniting me with two people, with Shaka from Burn, mm-hmm. Ghost Decibels, mm-hmm. and now reunited with my old friend Zach. So you're on a roll, buddy.
You're like the punk rock matchmaker is what you are.
Well, that's what I...
Resetter of. But you know what... There's a lot to be
said for a punk.
Exactly. There's a lot to be said for your original statement and the thesis of the whole podcast Turned Out a Punk. I think you're right. Like, what an odd story that myself and MVP met so long ago, and we met because we were the outcast odd kids in this really conservative little Bible Belt white bread Texas community. I was hanging out with, I guess, can we just go right into the story? I'll tell my version and then MVP, you can tell yours, or
yeah, well,
how do you want to do this?
Sure.
You want to do that? I've been on this podcast before and I told a bit of my early story, but essentially just one day I was with my brother and our best friend, Billy James, And we went and we hung out at the park in Sherman, Texas, this terrible little town that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And we were the punk kids. We listened to metal. We listened to punk. We didn't have the luxury of being able to sort of align ourselves with one scene. It was just anything that was counterculture. We mm-hmm. were down. And we met this kid. This kid was in our park, and he came up to us, and he could see that we were wearing metal and punk shirts, and we just started talking about music, and it turns out that it was the other guy on this phone call who went on to be a very successful pro wrestler named MVP, and I went on and did my thing and do what I do now, and I guess, you know, without going too far into the story yet, you're right, Damien. It's odd that this connection was made because of our shared affinity for this thing that is counterculture and this thing that made us stand out from this little small community. And we became great friends. We lost touch over the years. We both went on and did our things that took us to these sort of, you know, I guess, and for me, I never thought my life would end up the way it did. But I think it was originally dedicating myself to something that wasn't sort of the norm, definitely not the norm in this little community that I grew up in, that took me to where I am right now, and you as well, I would imagine. So, yes, Damien, you reconnected this whole thing through this podcast and through the fact that you were this kid as well. You just were in Canada, we were in Texas, you know?
Well, I think the thing that it also is, it's not just that you guys went on to kind of find success in respective industries. I think you went on to both find success at the heights of your respective industries, you know?
Well, thank you very much.
And it's just, and it's so, just so cosmic that you two had this connection. I guess MVP, what do you remember from that day?
Cosmic on multiple levels. On multiple,
like, absolutely.
Multiple levels. It's insane. I'm not much for faith, and you know, I'm not the most spiritual individual. But sometimes things happen to make you go, "Wait a minute, man. What?"
Yeah. So yeah, how did that happen? Yeah.
So, going back to the park story, at 15, turning 16 in Miami, like I just got out of this juvenile program I was locked up in for about 6.5 months. And one of my best friends got shot and killed, and I was involved in some serious gunplay, and, you know, shit was just crazy. And some guys, you know, were looking for me a few blocks away from my house, and they shot at me. And my mom had been begging me to go to Sherman, Texas, to go stay with my aunt. And after that, I finally acquiesced, because I'm like, man, if something happened to my brothers because of me, I'd never forgive myself. So the next day, my mom had me on a Greyhound to Sherman. And my aunt stayed in these apartments right across the street from this park, Park Place. And I'm in the park one night, walking around and vandalizing shit. I'm marking this park. I'm putting my name on shit because this is now my park. You know, this is my mindset at the time. And these fucking four white boys pull up and this it was a little yellow car. Didn't you guys have a little yellow car?
It was a little Ford station wagon. Yeah, it's a little yellow Ford station wagon. Yep.
And they jump out and they're laughing and they're playing. And this offended my sensibilities. How dare they come into my park laughing and joking and playing? And I was, you know, real standoffish at the time because that was my mentality back then. Mm-hmm. And I realized, like, dude, don't be a fucking asshole. You don't know anybody, man. Go make some friends. Go say hi. So I went over and I started chatting. And, yeah, like Zach said, you know, the T-shirts. And they told me they had a band. And, you know, we started talking about music. And that was right around the time I had just recently, like the year before, really been introduced to the punk scene, mm-hmm. hardcore. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I know that band. Oh, I heard of them. And these guys, what, you heard of them? Yeah, I know them. My friends turned me on to them. Yeah, I know what's going on. So even more so, like, yeah, I was an outcast, and I was doing my own thing. But even in the world of outcasts, I was even more of an outcast because amongst my friends, they would look at me, oh, man, he likes that old devil shit, man. He likes that. I remember I remember I went to go see the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and this was like in 88, maybe 89. And my boys were saying, yeah, man, we going out Saturday. I'm like, oh, no, man, I'm going to a concert. And I'll never forget, my friend Ed goes, oh, yeah, that's right. He's going to see the Red Hot Devils in Hell or some shit like that.
Well, with us, if you were like into, you know, anything demonic or satanic, that was like you were in our, you're like, yeah, dude, that's fucking rad. Because our thing at the time was, you know, in our other conversation, you mentioned that, you know, we were into DRI. We were fully into DRI. We were into, it was weird. We were into anything at the time. This is 87, 88, 89. All the great thrash metal was happening. So we were buying it the day it came out. Like, I bought Slayer, Rain and Blood the day it came out. But I also bought Black Flag, My War the day it came out. You know, there was no allegiance to any scene or any sound. It was just like anything that would piss off people at high school. And then here's this kid. Here's this kid from Miami that didn't look like us, but he knew these bands that we were into. And so, you know, and plus, I mean, we were getting our asses kicked on a daily basis because we were fucking dorks and we wore upside down crosses on our shirts, or we wore shirts with, you know, a Black Flag four bars, and we didn't look nor sound like anyone else. And then here's this kid that knew this stuff, who kind of had a history of fighting and getting into trouble and stuff. And so it was a great allegiance because we're like, holy shit, now we can like defend ourselves, you know, we're getting our asses kicked. Here's our dude, you know, which is great. By the way, I talked to Billy James, the guy we were with that day, and he freaked out. I told him who you were, who you ended up being, and he, we'll talk off the phone, but he wants to reconnect as well. So he's what's still one. Yeah, well, I talk to him daily, every day.
I gotta tell the story again because it was so funny. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget. Just Damien, to give you an idea of how lame like Sherman Dennison was. Like Saturday night, everybody would go to Dennison to the strip and cruise. Like it was 1955 or some shit. Yeah. And everyone would have their parents' cars, or the few cool kids that had their own would just drive up and down all night, like two blocks or whatever it was. Like really no real strip. Nothing going on. And I remember just losing my mind, like, man, my mom hit it off right sending me here because it's going to be hell to find trouble around here. And there was a pool hall. What was it called? Like the Cruising Club or some shit?
It was the Cruising Club. Yeah, it was the Cruising Club, actually. Yeah.
Damien, I told you, my long-term memory is amazing. My short-term memory is horrible. So I've been there shooting pool with Billy, and some kid runs in and tells us that the Burnouts were going to jump the Skaters because it was, I guess, some of your friends, the Skate Kids, had a little skate shop.
Yeah, yeah.
And, me and Billy, you know, we rushed down there, and I remember there was a bunch of Burnouts, and there was, you know, some, it looked like there was about to be something to go down, and me and Billy showed up. And we were like, what's up? What you want to do? And they fucked off. They didn't want to do anything, really. Not to us, maybe to the Skate Kids.
Yeah.
And then,
I think it's because not to you, because before you, they were always looking to sign some shit with us. Like, they didn't give a fuck. But then when you came around, I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
And it's funny because I even remember what I had on that night. I had on some blue jeans, and I had on a flannel shirt with just like the top two buttons buttoned.
How the fuck do you remember that? That's insane.
I remember because of the contrast, because when the Burnouts came back, they came back with that cowboy kid. The dude who was on the rodeo team.
Right.
I remember the dude was short, real stocky, had a full beard in high school, had on a cowboy hat, had a fucking flag wrapped around his neck, tucked in his shirt like an ascot or something.
And
he was like their champion. And I look around, and I notice everybody's standing behind me now. I'm like, hey, what the hell? How'd this happen?
Well, you know what? If it's the guy, after you, we were talking about this the other day, after you, when you had went back, we met up with that dude again, and my brother actually beat that dude up after the fact. Because we were at a party, and that dude wanted to fight me for whatever reason. I don't even know why. It was probably just my mouth. And my brother was nowhere around. You know, we were there together, but he was off with some friends or whatever. And then at the moment when I was about to just get in a fight with that dude, my brother beat him up. Yeah. Which, you know, I don't think without the courage of you in the first place, it would have been possible. But yeah, he kind of had enough. He started fighting a lot in high school. It got worse, you know, it got worse post you. The amount of us getting fucked with, it got worse. And my brother just, I don't know, he just snapped one day and was like, I'm not taking shit anymore. And, you know, it just got to be too much.
That surprises me about Donnie, as I remember Donnie. If you told me Billy snapped to beat the fuck out of that guy, I'd be like, yeah, okay, that sounds like...
Well, you know, Billy is...
Seemed like, you know, like, hey, he was just dead.
Yeah, dude, he kind of... I'm trying to think of what I can actually say and can't. He He is now, like, my brother is he's a professional musician as well. He is in the band The Toadies. That's what he does. Like, and he exactly that band. Exactly.
That's the thing about MVP is MVP low-key has the greatest knowledge of music.
Which is blowing my fucking mind.
No,
yeah.
You can name it just about any band, any artist, rock, rap, punk, metal, and he can go.
Yeah, well, if he can roll with you, Damien, because like I said on the last podcast, you're the Yoda to like the whole thing. No, my brother and I, you know, we went and did Hackers together, and then we did Only Crime, which is a hardcore band that was Fat Wreck put out with Bill Stevenson and Russ from Good Riddance, and then my brother joined the Toadies around the same time I joined Rise Against, and he just, toward the end of high school, he just kind of, the anger of us being the outcasts and being fucked with in that town just started getting to him, and he started getting in fights. And now he's like a second degree black belt, and he's the guy. Like he's kind of tough. It's funny, last weekend we were in Dallas, and my brother and Billy almost got in a fight with a dude. They're grown, they're in their 40s, and they almost got in a fight. It was like just like high school. Some dude, it was in an elevator, and some guy was being an asshole, and my brother, you know, they were going to push the buttons in the elevator. I mean, seriously, I'm not even making this up. And my brother, I heard him kind of speaking to the dude sort of deliberately, and Billy was just talking randomly about something, and I was like, dude, shut up. Listen to what's going on. And then Billy started paying attention, and it felt just like back in those days, man. It's like we're all still those kids, man. We're all still, you know, the kids that took shit and don't want to take shit anymore. It's crazy, man. Anyway, I digress.
No, it's funny. I was laughing because I remember like when you guys would have your jam sessions at that little warehouse and I'd come and hang out. And yeah. I'd find a speaker or some shit on the corner and I'd just post up. And it was always just a handful of kids that were coming to watch you guys practice. You know, it was never because, you know, you guys had like your own scene. It wasn't really a scene that you belonged to. You know, I remember.
Right.
That. Yeah. Well, it was a ballroom where it was all burnout metalheads. And then you guys played. It was like it was so funny because it was all burnout metalheads.
Yeah. Well, that's what Sherman at least had that. It didn't have like punkers or anything. But it had, like, dudes that loved Metallica. So we're like, all right. I mean, we love Metallica, too. So let's just go ahead and align ourselves with these guys. We're into a whole bunch of other shit. But at least you've got Metallica. We'll stay there. I remember on Dragging Main Street in Denison, I believe with you. I can't remember if it was with you or not. But so because we were into thrash metal and punk, like, we at the time did not like older metal. And now I love it, of course. But at the time, this dude was talking about Judas Priest, and we just made it our point, like, we weren't going to like Judas Priest, and we weren't going to like the old metal, which is ridiculous.
I still don't like Judas Priest. So
see, I do. I do. Like, I mean, I love it all, but he was, like, into Priest, and I remember Billy talked shit, said something about Judas Priest, and it almost went off. There was almost a fight because the dude got in Billy's face, and I swear to God, it's an actual quote. He goes, "Don't you say a word against Priest, Jack." It almost started a fight.
Don't you say a word against Priest, Jack.
Jack,
oh,
yeah, which is great. I want that on a shirt.
Don't you say a word against Priest, Jack.
Don't you say a word against Priest, Jack. Anyway, all right. Well, anyway, so, Damien, I'm going to go off in tangents just like I normally do. So anyway, at the time we met him and we hung out and he was our buddy and we kind of aligned ourselves. And I guess, how long were you in Sherman?
Dude, I was only there for a few months because I ended up getting in trouble. And there was a whole nother story you guys don't even know about that ended me having to go back to Miami.
I remember you just disappearing. Like you are a buddy, and then you were gone.
Well, here, I'll give you the condensed version. About the time that I was hanging out with you, I met this kid named Corey.
Okay.
And I remember Corey, he played football. He was a good guy. You know, he should cut hair and whatnot. And he invited me out to the Denison Ballroom on one of the black nights.
Okay.
And there was some girl at high school that was kind of crushing on each other. And I went to this dance, and she was there, and her boyfriend lived in Denison. Or at the time, she said they weren't together. It was her ex-boyfriend. I don't know. You know how chicks are, man. But
yeah.
As I recall, and yes, I do remember, I had on my Raider hat that night. I was in full fucking, I was in full terrorist mode. And they had free beer. So, okay. Some shit jumped off with me and this guy. He like rushed, yo, why you keep trying to talk to my girl? And I'm like, dude, your girl told me she don't fuck with you. Get up out my face, man. And it turned into like an altercation, and then we all went outside. And prior to that, I left out a very important part. I went to the bathroom, and this other dude, I'm sorry, not Art, the kid I met that invited me out that night, his name was Art. I met a dude named Corey who said, yo, who you been hanging out with, man? I heard about you from Miami. But yeah, so I told him, you know, you guys, and he didn't know you guys. And he knew Art, but he was like, yeah, those are the good kids, man. You got to, hang out with me, man. I've been wanting to vibe with you, man. Let's get, you know, I'm like, okay. There was another kid that went to Sherman who was from L.A., and I can't think of his name right now, but he was in Sherman for the same reasons that I was. He was fucked up in L.A. I was fucked up in Miami. Our parents said, here, go somewhere to stay out of trouble. And
this is so much more interesting than what we were doing. Go ahead.
Mess around, and you know, I end up vibing with these dudes, and we hit it off, and it's cool. Okay, so later on is when I have the altercation with this guy, and you know, all his homeboys and Dennison, and I'm with Art and these dudes, and we walk outside, and some guy has the trunk popped, and he's putting shells in a shotgun.
What?
And Art's like, you know, because all the Dennison dudes were standing around this car, and they had the trunk popped. And, like, they were going to war. And this was all over me. And this dude's girlfriend, who she said, she told me that they were broken up. She didn't mess with him. But apparently he didn't get that memo. So me, now all of a sudden, I'm in my element. At that time where my mindset was, I was completely in my element. And I see that kid Corey and the dude from L.A. They both walk up and they're like, what you want to do, dog? And they pull up their shirts and they got pistols in the waistband.
You got to be shitting me. This is insane.
This is my kind of party. So I grabbed the shotgun from the dude that had it in the trunk. He didn't want to give it to me. It was his shotgun. And I literally, like, took it from him. And we walked out to the street right in front of the Denison Hotel or the ballroom or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's all chaos. People, girls are screaming. Oh, they're going to fight. You know, people are running around. And me and these two dudes, like fucking the Magnificent Seven, we come walking down the middle of the street. I got the shotgun over my shoulder, and now everybody's freaking the fuck out. And these guys were at the trunk and their car popped. Where I'm from, you pop the trunk, that means you're going to get a gun. They had like sticks and bats and shit in the trunk.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, we had guns. Like, hey, man, you pop the trunk, that's gunplay. So in my infinite 16-year-old wisdom, I screamed that Sherman runs Denison, and all the boys in Denison were pussy. What my name was, and come see me in Sherman. And I fired two shots in the middle of the street. And then everybody scattered. We jumped in the car. We hauled ass. And a few days later, my aunt said, hey, you need to go home because this shit, you're just getting in too much shit here. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I probably do need to go home.
How the fuck? Let me interject. How the fuck did you get into that? I promise you, if this was a Saturday night, here's what your white, nerdy, fucking metalhead punker friends were doing. If it was a Saturday night, we had gone to the mall, and at 9 o'clock when it closed, we went home and watched the Headbangers Ball. If it was a Sunday night, we had gone to the mall until it closed and went home and watched 120 minutes. That's what we did. So how the fuck did you pop a trunk and get a shotgun? Because you just disappeared. That's like, we just...
I was out. I had to go. It was time to go. And it was weird because the night before I was supposed to go, I met some other kid, like trouble. When at that age, I was trouble and I found trouble. I met some other kid who was from Dallas, and we were going to steal a car and go hang out. And
Jesus fucking Christ.
He ends up like trying to, I'm with him because I didn't know how to steal cars without tools. Apparently he said he did. And I see the police roll up and they're like, hey, you with that guy? And this has been a mission. I'm not even going to tell the whole story. But I see him, and I'm like, nah, I don't know him. And the cop keeps going after him. And I just walked home, and that was it. I haven't been back to Sherman since.
Holy. I wish I hadn't been back to Sherman since, but unfortunately I have a lot. Dude, that's crazy because you were still into that shit and doing that, and you fucking met the biggest dork. I mean, to this day, I've never drank, smoke, or done drugs. Like, we were so not those dudes, you know, but we all hung out, and, you know, I couldn't sense any of that, you know, about you at the time. I couldn't, you know, you had told us these stories about yourself, but it seemed like you were on the straight and narrow, and that's why we couldn't figure out why.
I was trying.
You had bailed, you know, why you had left. Well,
you know what else happened? See, like my at that age, I was fucked up. I just wasn't right. Mm-hmm. And there was a teacher whose name I can't remember. He was a math teacher, I think. Big Texas football coach kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And he and I got into it in class one day.
That sounds about right.
And I, you know, I guess, you know, I don't know, man. They just, you know, Sherman High School was as big as like one wing of any high school I went to in Miami.
Sure.
So I don't think those teachers were really used to dealing with, you know, students with my attitude. So me and
I hated those fucking people. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember because you had a class like right across the hall from that guy. I remember seeing him in the hallway. Anyway, I ended up cussing him out, telling him to fuck himself, and we got into some words, and I trashed the classroom, and then I went.
That might be the same teacher that called my brother an idiot, and my dad called the school and threatened to beat that guy to beat his ass, and came down to the school and waited on him in the parking lot. And the dude, I guess he got out some other way. I know who you're talking about, and he was a complete asshole. Yeah.
He was a real jerk. But, I mean, I remember I ended up getting suspended, and the experiment, the Sherman experiment, I have some good memories of it, but it didn't work out quite the way my mom and aunt were hoping that I go there and chill out, because at the time, I was into trouble, and I would find trouble. Yeah. I didn't have to. And I found you guys, and that really, for a while, tempered that. Because I would just hang out with you and listen to music and ride around, and you guys turned me on to this day. The only reason that I know Voivod exists is because of
that is awesome.
That in and of itself, dude, I went and saw them the other night, just a few months ago. I drug my wife to it, and I was stoked. I do every song. Still love that band. I love them.
And that connects Canada, too, to this conversation, because they, of course, are Canada's greatest metal band.
They're you know what, they're one of the world's greatest metal bands. Mm-hmm. But yes, you're right, absolutely Canada's. But what a fucking important, awesome band they are. If no one's heard Voivod that's listening to this, go listen to Voivod. But you know, for us, it was this much needed sort of element in our dynamic, because we only had each other, you know, and we were fucking drowning. And here's this kid from somewhere else to us that was so exotic. You know, he's got this story and he's done these things, but he's just a kid just like us, you know. And I think it gave us the gumption to be like, okay, there is life outside of all this. You know, we're not crazy. This kid likes us. This kid knows what we're talking about. You know, he's got this completely different life than us, but he gets it. And I think it gave me as a, you know, a bit of like, you know, there's times when you think you're crazy. You know, mm-hmm. There was times when I would think like, man, maybe they're right. Maybe my brother and I are these fucking weirdos that maybe we need to fall in line. You know, you go through all that shit in your head at the time when you're the outcast and you're not fitting in. And then we meet this kid that was totally, you know, like totally accepted us, you know? So it gave me the gumption at an early age, like, okay, I just need to get out of here. I think that's what it is. Mm-hmm.
You know? Dude, you know what, as we were saying earlier, to your credit, and I have to give you some huge kudos, because in life, all too often, you know, we all have hopes and dreams and aspirations, but, you know, how many of us actually see those through to fruition? You get married, you have a kid, you know, life happens. I think John Lennon said, life is what happens while you're busy making other plans.
Right.
And I'll never forget being at your apartment, chilling in your room, and you telling me without question, unflinchingly, that you and Donnie were going to be professional musicians. You were going to play music for a living. You guys were going to have a band. You would teach me to play so that I could come on tour with you guys and be your guitar tech. I remember this video. There was no question about it. You know, and in high school, you know, you got a high school band. Yeah, we're going to be a band. Yeah, you know, running everybody a few years later, and you know, you got, you know, the fat wife with three kids and a job you hate. You know, so much
fun. A lot of those dudes in Sherman, man. People, man. Other people
you
that
did it.
That You know, well, thanks, man. I think I was just, I was willfully ignorant, because I feel like I knew that if I gave myself something else to do, and I didn't care, I had no, you know, I didn't care if I was sleeping on floors for the rest of my life. I knew I just wanted to play guitar and play music. That's what I loved it since I was a child. If I gave myself anything else to fall back on, I probably would have fallen back on that, you know? And I think it was growing up in Sherman and feeling like such an outcast that it was that propulsion of, okay, you got to get out of here. You know what I mean? Like keep moving forward, or, you know, and I think all of those things converge. But thank you. That means a lot for you to you know, to say that.
I just had another random memory just pop in my head. I wasn't there, but I used to hear you guys talk about it all the time. The jam at the dam.
Damien, if you don't know if you've never heard of the jam at the dam, so Sherman and Denison are right on the border of Oklahoma. And so it's like really northern Texas. So I'm talking 5 miles away from the Oklahoma border. And so there's a Lake Texoma. So it's in Texas, Oklahoma. And there's a dam there. So every year there would be this big concert, this like festival show called the Jam at the Dam. And it was to benefit muscular dystrophy. And it was a real big deal to go play the Jam at the Dam.
Yeah.
And we played it in two incarnations. We played it with, and we said this the other day, and I'm going to go ahead and bust myself out. I had a band, me and my brother, with this.
Here we go. Come on. Spit it out.
And it was called Forbidden Cause, which is the stupidest name in the world. But I
don't
14.
Think it's that bad. I don't know. I'm
it's
in a band.
It's so bad.
I'm in fucked
Tim
up.
McElrath,
so.
Tim McElrath, a singer for Rise Against, gives me so much shit. When they found out, the band I'm in found out the name of my band, they fuck with me so, this cause is forbidden, sir. You know, that shit. They just tear me apart. But anyway, so we played the Jam at the Dam, and it was such a big deal. I mean, it was such a big deal. I mean, it was like out of a movie. The girl in high school that I had the crush on, like, we made out. And, you know, just the whole thing. It could not have been a better night. And then the next year, my brother and I, after you had left, we joined a band called Harm's Way with a Z. There's Harm's Way.
Yep.
There's the Harkway. This was Harm's Way with a Z, and these guys were rad. Like, they played Slayer covers and Metallica covers. Like, they were the band we wanted to be in, and we joined up with them, and we played it again the next year. So,
They became something else, right? They became another band, right?
Harm's Way.
I thought you said
no.
I thought you said on the other podcast, maybe, or someone from that band. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, hang on. Fuck. There was another rival band in town called Necromancer that have become a pretty popular metal band called THC now.
Okay.
Like Texas Hippie Coalition.
Okay, yeah.
I'm trying to think of who else this might have been. But no, Harm's Way, those guys just kind of stayed there. And they were great musicians. They were awesome. And they were the guys we wanted to be in, you know, and that kind of springboarded. But, yeah, the Jam at the Dam. And did you go to that year?
No. I didn't go. I remember you guys always talking about
the legendary Jam at the Dam.
It was legendary. I never went. I just remember hearing about the Jam.
Well, you know what's funny is, well, not funny, but my dad died shortly after all of this. And from that performance, somebody had a VHS, you know, filming it and stuff. And I had a VHS. My dad's on the video. Back then, nobody had cell phones and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was like the only video footage I have of my dad. And I've been looking for that forever. So if anybody, no one's listening to this that has that. But I'm trying to track people down that might have been there. But, yeah.
There have been some strange things. Yeah, there have been some strange things this podcast has turned up for people. So if anyone has
You turned this up, Damien.
let's talk about another level of the cosmic.
Okay, so
before we get into that, though, I just want to say, you know, I've mentioned this before because you brought up movies there, Zach. I've brought this up before to you, MVP. Some people are blessed to have maybe one or two stories in their life that are worthy of cinematic capturing. I think, you know, in addition to all the other stuff that you bring up in your episode of this podcast, that I think this story with the two of you would make an incredible movie.
Well, if there's anybody out there wants to make it, I'm game.
It writes itself. Like it's already like I can picture it already in my head.
Well, there's a three part to this. I mean, just us kind of meeting in this weird godforsaken town and going off and doing our lives. That's one thing. And then you left because of, I just found out, because of some major serious shit, which, for, by the way, for Dennison and Sherman, you actually firing a shotgun in the middle, that is fucking insane. Like, I didn't even hear about that. Seriously, that's the most insane thing I've ever heard happening up there. So
that's our third act. Nuts. That's our third act in the movie.
It's insane. So you left. We fell out because, of course, there was no email. There was no phones. There was no way to stay in touch. And I don't know how many years later, 10 years later, for people that don't know, in Dallas, well, I had moved to Dallas. My brother and I started our band Hackfish, and that's what we were doing. I believe Hackfish had actually broken up at this point, and I had joined GWAR, which we covered on our podcast, Damian.
Yes.
And so in Dallas, there was like maybe a 3-block by 6-block area of town called Deep Ellum, which is where the clubs are, the rock clubs and everything.
Let MVP take over the story at this point.
Yes, go ahead.
Because his version of this is awesome.
Okay, go ahead.
So I was in, what was it? We were in Dallas for a crazy little convention or something. My wife and I was married at the time. And we went to this convention in Dallas, and that night, you know, one of the other guys, she was, you go out, have some drinks with your friends, go have a good time. So I had a hall pass. I went to Deep Ellum, and I was telling this guy, Brian, who I was with, who was also a musician, about these guys I knew in high school. They had a band, Forbidden Cause, you know, not too far from Dallas. You know, I wonder if those guys ever did anything, you know, who knows, you know. And we bounced around a couple rock bars, and I just, you know, looked at some flyers and casually asked guy, hey, man, you ever hear of a band out of Dallas called Forbidden Cause? And, okay. On the off chance that maybe. You never know, right? And we end up walking a few blocks, and we see a bar called G-Spot.
Now, let me interject here. I don't remember the existence of this bar. Honestly, I don't. I think at the time, like, weird clubs would pop up in Deep Ellum all the time. There was the main, like, Trees, the main bar, Clearview, Curtain Club. I don't remember this part, but it sounds ridiculous. But go ahead. Go ahead.
I think we've also established beyond a shadow of a doubt at this point that MVP's memory is beyond
so much better.
Record. Yeah, it's beyond historical record. So
MVP, was it Galaxy or was it G-Spot? G-Spot sounds so fucking suggestive.
It was G-Spot because I told Brian, as men, we could not walk past that bar without going inside and having a drink.
Oh, that's so fucking
how can
weird.
How can you not just at least touch the G-Spot? You know what I'm saying?
That just sounds so fucking... Okay, go ahead.
So G-Spot, and I remember I was drinking a Heineken and posted up on the bar. Nothing remarkable. It was a busy Saturday night, what have you. And I see this skinny, bald-headed guy wearing a T-shirt that says badass on it. And he didn't look like much of a badass, which, you know, I thought,
thank you.
Cool. You know, well, nowadays you never know.
I look like even less of a badass.
And I can say that I know a lot of badasses that don't look like a badass compared to MVP, so... Well, you know, I think it's all relative. You know, Zach, you look.
Not only do I not look like a badass then, nor now, but I'm definitely not one. Go ahead.
You're badass to me, Zach. You're definitely badass.
Thank you very much, Damien. Thank you very much.
Badass is all relative. It's all relative. I remember seeing the shirt, and I, you know, said, I just got your attention. Say, hey, that's a cool shirt. Where'd you get that? And you said, and then you told me the story about you're in a band, and this guy gave it to you. And I said, yeah, what band do you play in? He said, you probably never heard of it. It's a band called GWAR. And I'm like, oh, shit, you play for GWAR? No kidding? And, you know, we start to say, you heard of GWAR? Because, of course, I don't look like the type of guy that you know, listen to GWAR, right? And then I asked him, hey, man, what's your name? And he says, Zach. Now, the Zach Blair that I knew in high school had, like, long, curly ringlets down past his shoulders. And, you know, and this guy... is shaven bald, but I remember I looked at your face a little closer and I said, Zach? And you said, yeah. I said, you have a brother named Donnie? And you go, yeah, I do. And I looked at Brian, I said, dude, this is unfucking believable. You have no idea what I so remember the band I was telling you about, Forbidden Cause? And he goes, yeah. I said, dude, this is the dude from the band. And you look and you go, what do I know? And then your eyes lit up when the light bulb came on you, and you go, dude, what happened to you, man? Because I'm like 100 pounds heavier.
Well, because at that point, it had been easy 12 years, probably.
At least 10, 11 years. At that
Yeah.
11 years or so.
Yeah, 11.
A full decade had gone by. And,
absolutely.
At that point, you know, it was funny because we're like, yo, this is incredible. What are the chances? What are the odds that you're not on tour this night? You come into this bar. I'm in town. You wore that shirt to make me say something. All of these things came together and bam, we exchanged information. And then after that, every time you guys came down to South Florida with Guar for a show, we'd always link up and you'd leave me tickets and I'd come and see you. We'd hang out for a bit and jam. I remember you introduced me to Dave a few times. He was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And much to Damien's joy and delight, I was there that night when Macho Man Randy Savage came to beat up Doyle.
Well, I guess I should jump in now and say this is how I put this all together, is because I have heard about Macho Man showing up one night to a Misfits Guar show from two different people. I had heard it from a Misfits show, actually. I knew it was Guar necessarily, but I heard it from yourself, Zach, and I had also heard it from MVP, and I could never reconcile how I heard both these stories. So the other night, I sat down with MVP and brought this up to him, and he told me the story he has just told about meeting the guitar player from Guar in a bar, and at that point, I said, your friend's name is Zach Blair, right? He goes, oh, have I told you this story before? And I'm like, no, that's because that's my friend too.
Well, I'll tell my version and then MVP.
Yes.
You can tell yours. So, so now we had reconnected and we were getting in touch, but you would come out in Florida and we would hang out. We had reconnected. You weren't wrestling at this point yet. You were trying to get into wrestling. Is that true?
I want to say at that point, I don't even think I had started wrestling school yet.
This was either 99 or 2000. So Guar and the Misfits, this was the American Psycho era of Misfits.
Michael
so we're
Graves.
Talking
yeah.
Michael Graves was singing Doyle and Jerry only, and Dr. Chud was playing drums. We did 2 6-week back-to-back 6-week tours. It was the longest. I think I went home for like 4 days in the middle of it. It was an entire summer. So at this point, if anyone remembers, the Misfits had started wrestling. I think it was for WWE. Was it WWE or WCW?
It was in WCW at the time. WCW,
yeah.
That's what it was. So every like week, those guys would fly out, and they were the sort of henchmen to a wrestler. I don't remember what guy that was.
Vampiro.
You guys would know.
His name is Vampiro.
There you go. And they were getting in the ring and doing some things. They were kind of his baddies, you know. And it was really cool for them. It was really good. So every time they would have to fly out, we would just do a Guar show or whatever. Well, I guess it's common knowledge now that, you know, somewhere along the way, Doyle and had started seeing the Macho Man's girlfriend, wife at the time. And, you know, she was showing up to shows. She would be at shows. And we hit Florida. MVP, you were coming out to hang out with, you know, because we had reconnected. And I'm putting on Guar makeup, and I look in the mirror, and the Macho Man Randy Savage is standing behind me. And shit's about to go off, and it's not good. And it got diffused really quick, but by that point, MVP, you had shown up. So were you in, you saw the sort of kerfuffle, or were you there right after?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I never saw an actual altercation.
Okay.
So whatever transpired, you know, beforehand, I didn't see. I just remember because I watched you guys play.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, Macho Man was still chilling in the back.
And he stuck around.
Yeah, he stuck around for a while, which now that I know what happened prior to, I'm surprised that he was still there.
Yeah.
But it all makes sense now because – at the time, yeah, I was young. I don't even think I was 30 yet, man. I was probably like 29, maybe just 30. And I'm pretty sure I was on the gas at that point. So I was pretty jacked up and swollen. Mm-hmm. And
I was on the gas too at that point. totally joking.
A different kind of gas.
The badass gas, Zach.
Badass gas, exactly.
Badass gas. that makes you fucking play hour-long shows in a heavy-ass costume and still rip.
Well, that's it. I would almost pass out nightly. I will say that. Like, almost every night, I'd either vomit or pass out.
But because you were on the badass gas, you were able to finish it.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly. You got to harness your inner badass gas.
My brother was with me, and my brother is like, he's 3 years younger than I am, but like 3 inches taller and bigger, state champion wrestler, all this shit. So he's, you know, and a cop. And I remember the bouncers and a cop. My brother was talking to the cops, and everybody was scared of Randy, so much so that they came over and were like, hey, if we got to throw this guy out, man, will you guys help us? And now you got two cops and three or four bouncers, and they want more bodies to help. And dude, at the time, Macho was fucking yoked, man.
I remember him being the largest human I've ever been in contact with at the time.
And at the time, like, I hadn't started wrestling school yet, but I knew the Macho Man, and I went over to him, and I said, hey, Macho, is it cool if I take a picture? Can we take a picture together? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure, brother. You know, we took a pic, and we started shooting the shit. I'm like, dude, you are a fucking jack, man. He goes, oh, yeah, you got to keep up with the young guys, you know? Oh, yeah, and we were talking. And at that point, I realized, like, all the misfit guys were, like, you know, kind of fucking around, and George was over there with them. And I could, at this point, I kind of realized what was going on, but I didn't know, you know, the depth of it. And then over to the side was the security guys and the two cops. And then me and Macho Man standing there. And I realized, like, okay, I see the dynamic. And he even said, he goes, yeah, brother, you're the only one around here that's being nice to me.
I don't think it was people weren't being nice. I think it was just everyone was just dumbfounded. You know, for me, it was just like, this is fucking surreal.
Everyone's afraid, like, of the Macho Madness.
They were
afraid of the Macho Madness. Exactly. And I just wanted everybody to hang out, because at that point, you know, those guys, we had been out with the Misfits for a long time, and I haven't talked to them forever. But they, you know, they're my buddies, and I loved them. And then I was meeting Macho Man, and I was this dumb kid. I just wanted everybody, like, let's just all hang out, dude, and talk, you know. I'm from Texas. And so it wasn't a fight. It was fine. And you could tell, I honestly, the odd thing is I ended up feeling like I was kind of, felt really bad for him, you know, because it was obvious he wasn't wanted there. It was making the situation weird. And so cut to my night, like, I think you had left and I'd seen you off. And then I went to my bus after the show, and I'm just watching Goodfellas or whatever. And I've only told this story at, like, this is story.
This actually happened before that. Because
maybe it was before that. Maybe
he left. I remember I was there when he left. He jumped in a cab.
That's right. That's right. So maybe you were still inside hanging out or watching Misfits or whatever, and I had gone out to my bus, and he was like, there's a knock on the door, and he's like, hey, man, can I use your bathroom, brother? And I was like, yeah, dude, you can do whatever you want. You know, you're hungry, you know, whatever. Take a nap. And he used the bathroom, and he comes out, and he sat down, and he just put his head in his hands. And then I found myself as, like, at 25, consoling the Macho Man Randy Savage, with my hand on his shoulder, and like, dude, it's, you know, it's gonna be fine. I didn't know shit about life, you know. I'm like, it sucks, dude, but, you know, it's gonna be totally fine. Everything will get better. I mean, to this day, I can't believe it actually happened. I tell people the story, and they look at me incredulously right now, you know. But sure. And then he's kind of like, you know, started shaking his head, and he looked at me and said, oh, thank you, brother. Thank you, man. I'm going to go ahead and get back in there. And then he left, and that was it.
He's like, I'm going to go back to mean mug those people now. That's
exactly.
I need that pep talk.
Exactly. And so that's a part, that the craziest thing. That's a story I bring out at parties, you know, like, so, like, yeah. Listen to this crazy shit. And you were there.
Yeah,
you know, you were there, which is so that means, like, whoever's heard this story and thought I was lying, someone else was there. It happened.
It absolutely happened, man.
Well, this to me is, like, you know, it's obviously for me a legendary kind of moment and story. But I think, you know, the fact that this wasn't your only story MVP with Macho Man, this was just kind of like the first of kind of like a little of a friendship that formed, kind of thing. Well, not indirectly, but why don't you tell the story about you and Macho Man? Beyond that,
way after that, once I actually started wrestling, a friend of mine who I was in prison with, who I stayed, you know, he and I stayed in touch. When I got out, his wife was friends with someone who was friends with Macho Man, And we're like, hey, why don't you give us one of your tapes and we can send it to him? And you never know, maybe, you know, he can help you out or something. And I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. And I sent it and never heard anything about it. And he wasn't affiliated with anybody, so I didn't think anything really would come of it. But Steve Kern had a wrestling school up in Tampa. And I would drive up there to work out sometimes. And somehow he and the Macho Man had worked out some deal where Macho Man was going to do MachoMan.com. Feel the madness. Oh, yeah. And it was going to be internet wrestling, but it was profanity, and they had some strippers for the ring girls, and it was going to be like adult. Anyway, I went there, and y'all had to cut promos, and everybody was cutting promos like crazy, Macho Man. And I'm the only one to cut a promo, or not the only one, but the first one, going at him, yeah, asking him about Viagra and his Bengay. And he popped, he loved it, and he pulled me to the side, and we started talking. And then I told him about the tape, and then he goes, oh, yeah, oh, that was you. Yeah, I got, oh, yeah. So he remembered. And I was MachoMan.com never actually took off. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, he took an interest in me. And I used to trip the fuck out when my phone would ring, and I'd look, and it said Randy.
That's awesome.
Fucking Macho Man is calling me. And it would always, and back then, I used to wrestle as Antonio Banks. And it was, hey, Antonio, what's going on, brother? Just called to catch up with you. And I'd shoot the shit with Macho Man for the next 15, 20 minutes. And, you know, throughout my career, just randomly out of nowhere, man, he'd call me up and check on me when I got signed. He called me to congratulate me. And the words of wisdom, two things that he drilled into me over and over in that conversation. And that was the last time that I spoke to him. He said, don't trust anybody because everyone is out to take your spot. Oh, yeah. Everyone is out. And that was his thing. Like, he always was paranoid that someone was trying to take his spot. Mm-hmm. And two, save your money. Save your money. And again, he was notoriously thrift, if you will. Yeah. He was. People used to say he was a cheapskate. But,
Well, that's, I mean, but that is great wisdom. I mean, as, you know,
save your money. Don't trust anybody.
Save your money.
It seems like
be a miser in a castle.
Yeah, it seems like a Scroogean type existence, though, at a little bit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. For the Macho Man. Yeah.
But, like, did you ever bring up this night? Did you ever tell him about, like, the night that you saw him with Guar and the Misfits?
Yeah, we talked about it once, and he popped huge. And he actually remembered. He didn't remember me per se, but he did remember that one night there was one kid that was nice. It was cool with him. He did remember. He goes, that was you. Well, yeah, I remember. Yeah, what a night that was. Oh, yeah.
It was the definition of awkward and just odd. You know, just these larger-than-life characters having these real emotional sort of moments, you know, in front of everybody and not really being ashamed of it, just letting it out, you know. You know, not being able to process it. Go ahead.
Well, no, I think sometimes about that WCW locker room where you would have had, like, the Misfits. And then you would have had Bob Mould working there at that time, too, from Husker Du. And then you would have also had, like, every, you know, hero of wrestling at that point, kind of in North America. Like, they had all the big Mexican wrestlers, Lucha Libre stars coming up, too. It's like, what a cultural hub that would have been.
Yeah. Yeah, and
don't forget our good buddy Robbie Brookside. He spent more than a cup of coffee at WCW.
Absolutely, but Brookside told me, unfortunately, he missed Bob Mould by a couple weeks, and I think that was a sad for both of them because I think Bob Mould, like being such a fan of wrestling that he is, would have loved to have met Robbie Brookside, you know, and then Robbie Brookside, obviously loving punk like he does, would have.
Well, you know, in this convergence of punk and wrestling, I didn't realize until meeting you, Damian, really how deep it went. Mm-hmm. Well, and then I read the Bob Mould book and that whole thing as well. And then go cut to one of my really close friends right now is a kid named Daniel Freed, and he is in the genius, amazing band Radioactivity. But he also has his own band, also Genius Video, and another genius band called Bad Sports and High Tension Wires with my the singer of the Draculas, my other band. Mike Wiebe. Anyway, he is the hugest wrestling fan. When I told him that I grew up, I was like, hey, dude, I just really, you know, like, I don't know why I've never told you this. I grew up with MVP, and he fucking shit. He was just like, you're shitting me, dude. what the fuck? And then he wanted to know the entire story. And I was like, actually, we're doing a podcast about it. So I wanted to give him a shout out on this because you and Damien, you and this kid, because you can go all night about punk. He's like you, you know, but he can go all really all night about wrestling. Like he really knows his shit. So
I think like this might reveal my entire modus operandi for doing this podcast. My dream is to someday find a way to have a punk wrestling convention and get all the people from wrestling that are into punk together with all the people that are in punk bands that are into wrestling. And that's, just have this, I mean, a massive meeting of the minds. Because I think it's like, it's crazy, but it's like, yeah, like Lars from Rancid. It's like, you know, like everyone I've had, like so many people I've had on this podcast. But, you know, all respect to, except for yourself, really, Zach. Though you have put music in wrestling. Rise Against have had songs in WWE.
Yeah, you've had WWE songs.
That's true. And, you know, I grew up with the Von Erichs. I mean, in Dallas, the Sportatorium, yeah, you know, those were your superheroes. Those guys were your superheroes growing up there, you know.
Well, I think CM Punk said it best in one of his promos. It's like there's very few true American art forms. And, like, professional wrestling kind of is one. And because of that, it affects all of us at such like an early level that, you know, and
sure,
some people carry it with them their whole lives and other people less so, but everyone's got that touchstone of it.
Have you ever seen any footage of the GWAR wrestling shows that they would put on?
Oh yeah.
They would just put the stage would be the ring.
Yeah.
And they would play and GWAR characters, every GWAR character would wrestle. They would fight and they would do tours that way. I never really was a part of a tour. I was a part of a show or two, I think, but I never was a part of a tour. But they would tour that way. Yeah.
Well, GWAR, I guess, like, is, you know, probably one of the inspirations I would imagine behind Kaiju Big Battle. And, you know, like,
Dude, I'm such a huge fan of Kaiju Big Battle. I haven't seen one yet live, but at every WrestleMania, I'm usually there for the convention at WrestleCon, and I want to go, but timing never quite works out. But dude, GWAR has to be some sort of an influence on Kaiju Big Battle.
Oh, absolutely. I would say
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Kaiju Big Battle is like, it's Kaiju, you know, like a Japanese monster movie, but in a wrestling context. So
it is
something that has to be, yeah, as MVP says.
I got
to
check that out.
Yeah, it's easy to become a big fan of it and stuff. But I think
you got to see it. Guys in a wrestling ring with cardboard buildings and dressed up as these various kaiju monster creations doing
that
wrestling.
That sounds like my entire career in GWAR. I just felt like I was in a big Godzilla costume the whole fucking time. And then somebody gave me a guitar. I was like, oh yeah, go play a set. Like, what are you serious? Really? Shit. I can't even walk in this fucking thing. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. Cause right. You had the big feet and everything.
Yeah. I had the big dinosaur feet. I was Flatus Maximus.
Flatus Maximus.
Yeah. Yeah. It sucked. It's like if you were in Kiss, it's like if you joined Kiss and you were like the raccoon or something. You know what I mean? Like you weren't the cool one, you know? I mean, Flatus was a cool enough character, but I wanted, you know, Ballsack the Jaws of Death. He's a cool character, you know? You know, and I just was had all these dinosaur parts all over my costume.
Yours also is probably one of the sweatier ones, I would imagine.
Oh, God, yes. And then I had this weird add-on tail that basically fit like a big hot rubber cape, but I would never wear it. And they made the costume so much cooler. Corey Smoot, rest in peace, that replaced me. They redid the costume when he joined the band, and it looked fucking killer. It was awesome. When I was in the band, the guy that had played it before me, he played it real cartoony. So my mask had these big kind of Groucho Marx looking eyebrows. It was real cartoony. I was like, shit, I don't look mean. I don't look angry. But anyway.
Well, I got to tell you, Matt, you know, like I discovered GWAR when I was in prison. Like years, I had seen GWAR.
Me too. I'm just joking.
In the newspaper or something. Yeah, well, when you were in prison, right?
Yeah.
Where were you, Huntsville?
Yeah, exactly.
I had read about GWAR and, you know, it was like a newspaper article. And it basically was just talking about how terrible this whole thing is. And then years later... I was listening to some college radio station, and I heard Slaughterama for the first time.
That's a jam.
I actually like that. That's pretty cool. And then, you know, that's where, you know, you're not going to hear a whole lot of GWAR, but not on your radio unless you catch it on, like, college radio or some shit. And then when I got home, I actually went and saw Gwar before you and I reconnected in Dallas. So I saw him at, I think, like the Button South or some shit. That was my first time seeing Gwar. And needless to say, I was mind fucked when his giant penis was squirting white shit all on the off.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll do it. I mean, you never forget that first time.
And then
time.
After that was when we connected. Oh, no, especially when there's a giant penis on stage squirting white stuff all on it. Insane.
Yeah. You never, you didn't sign up for that. You know, you just wanted to go see a rock band. Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Yeah, I knew there were costumes and I knew there were props, but I, you know, and I had heard about the blood. You know, mm-hmm. Not the giant fucking dick shooting his load all over the
other. Yeah.
But
it was that.
But I remember just really getting into the sound, like the whole gimmick, Dave's vocals. Like I said, okay, man, I can actually groove with this. But on what is it, the AVClub.com?
Yeah,
Where they do a cover of Carry On? That's my favorite version.
Yeah, they did it really good. They really did it well.
Musically, it was insane, and Dave nailed it too. You know, I was like,
he did. I mean, to digress about, I feel like Dave Brocky had one of the great all time, and I'll say punk voices, mm-hmm. because he wasn't. You know, he would scream and do his thing, but Dave had a punk voice, and to me, in the vein of Leonard Phillips from the Dickies or Jello Biafra, you know, the great just quirky punk voice that doesn't sound like anyone else. Like, no one's ever going to sound like Dave Brocky or ever has or ever will. And I always thought that. And his voice was just every night. He'd open his mouth even to speak. Like, you know, he looked nothing like you would have expected him to look out of costume. But when he opened that mouth just to talk, it's like, oh, that's Odorous Urungus. You know, it's just his voice. Just see, he embodied it, you know. Yeah, I miss that guy a whole lot, man.
Yeah, you introduced me to him a couple times, and we actually stood around and shot the shit for a little bit. He was really, really cool, man. But
he
it was
funny,
because,
man.
Like you said, Odorous Urungus is not the guy that you would expect to meet after the show with the preppy shirt talking about his
totally. He wore Nike golfing. He wore Nike golf clothes. Like, he golfed every day. You know, he
was talking about his tea time.
Exactly. Yeah. He never missed that, you know. Yeah, he was just the best, man. We played a Riot Fest, Rise Against and Gwar, and at the time those guys had never met Dave. They had met some of the other guys, Brad the drummer, Michael Dirks the guitar player, because we're still family, you know. We still, if I'm in Richmond or if they're in Texas, you know, we all come out to see each other, but it never worked for Brocky. And it was such a broad, it's such a swath of like who Dave was. So I walked Tim, our singer, over to meet him, and Dave is completely naked and he has a towel around him and he's sweating. He's in the truck. I don't know what he was doing. It was the middle of the day. And he met Tim and immediately told an off-color joke. Just kind of like, hey, I'm Dave, by the way, and just told the most offensive, crazy joke. And Tim was just like, okay, that's exactly what I expected. And then that night, we went on the bus with Joe, our bass player, Joe Principe, yeah. and Brandon Barnes, our drummer. And Dave just talked about World War II like a historian, by the way. I mean, like a college professor talked about World War II to these guys for probably an hour and a half. You know, he was a Renaissance man. I mean, in the true term, you know, total Renaissance man. But but anyway, I'm glad you got to meet him. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it was a real cool experience. And it's funny because when he passed away, needless to say, it was a bummer. But like many of my experiences, old friend, I owe that to you. Like we said before, as I was developing my quote unquote punk sensibilities, I told Damien the story. My foray into the world of punk, I make no bones about it, was very racial. And that I had a white friend who was a skinhead, but at that point, all skinheads were Nazis, right? That's all I knew.
Sure.
And then he taught me about the scene and the differences. And, you know, I used to ride home with him from work, and we had this rule. It was his car, his music. And this is where, all of a sudden I'm listening to, the Dead Kennedys and the Angry Samoans and SOD and MDC. Yeah. And this is shit I had never heard before. And I remember one of my favorite songs, and I still to this day remember it vividly. I dedicate this song to thee, Jello Biafra, because I fucked this line. It's called I Hate You. Like, dude, what kind of song is this, man? What the hell is this?
That's awesome.
So rolling with Wes, my buddy Wes, I'll never forget, he gave me a cassette tape. And on that raggedy-ass cassette tape, on one side was Bad Brains, Eye Against Eye.
Yeah.
And on the other side was Uplift Mofo Party Plan.
Oh, my God.
It was in Texas with you guys that, like, I knew of Bad Brains, and I knew of the Chili Peppers, and I knew of Fishbone. I knew of these other bands because of my introduction from Wes. But if I'm not mistaken, I want to say you guys gave me my first Fishbone cassette. Like, I think somehow somebody gave you one, or you had an extra one, and you gave it to me.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah, I think you guys were my actual introduction to Fishbone, if I'm not mistaken.
So, those early records are so fucking great. Those the first like four of Fishbone
I
records.
I know for a fact 24/7 Spies I knew of because of you guys. You guys.
Do you know that band, Damien?
Oh, absolutely. Caroline Records. They used to play shows with, like, well, Youth of the Day, and there's all sorts of crazy flyers I've seen with 24/7 Spies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was good stuff, man.
Yeah, so at that time, like, you know, the music that I was introduced to and my musical tastes and sensibilities at that time especially were influenced by you guys a lot, because hanging out with you, talking about music, I was learning new music, stuff that I wasn't into, and, you know, I became into it. So even then, like, you left my time with you guys left a lasting impression going forward.
Well, absolutely on this end, too. When I told my brother and Billy that I had reconnected with you, they freaked out. And Billy was like, dude, you got to give me his number. But is he on Facebook? You know, the whole thing. He's just like, he's in Houston? Dude, we got to go down there, man. We need to hang out, you know. He's a high school teacher now. Like, Billy Drews is like, yes, dude. He is a high school teacher. And he's like every kid's favorite teacher. He's kicking ass. He's got twins. And, I still talk to him every day, man. Every day. But we need to make a trip. We need to all get together, man.
For sure, man. I can come out there. You guys come here, whatever. I mean, I'm always up for a road trip, but that's
absolutely.
I'm definitely up for that, man. Because I remember, here was Forbidden Cause.
Oh,
you had
Jesus.
Zach playing guitar with his long curly ringlets, and you had Donnie, who was, you know, the older brother, composed and kind of quiet, except when he and Zach would get into it about, you know, what they thought would be better. And it was like Leave It to Beaver to me watching you two argue, because it was so it was no anger or hostility. It was both of you kind of like pleading with each other. No, but shouldn't it be like this? But no, should be like this. But
that's exactly how it is still.
No, but really it should be like this. It was great. And Billy was the you know, and this is gonna sound so fucked up, but I was just thinking back to South Park when wants to start a boy band, and he says, "No, I get to be the tough one. Every boy band has a tough one." Well, Billy was the tough one.
He was. He didn't take any shit. And we called it Forbidden Cause. It's so terrible.
Billy was Nathan Explosion.
Yeah, he was exactly. But Damien, you made this happen.
Dudes, well, I can't keep you guys longer, because I could keep you guys talking about this all day, because this is amazing that I got to do this. Because this is, as I said before, I've gotten to do a lot of cool things on this show. Got to interview a lot of cool people. But knowing that this happened and playing some small role in making a conversation about this thing happen, my God. One of the proudest moments in Turned Out of Punk history by far.
Thank you, Damien. Thank you, man.
I have to admit, it's pretty cool, man. It's pretty cool.
It's amazing. It's amazing. You reconnected us, and now I want to continue and get back in each other's lives. This is awesome, Damien. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, MVP.
Oh, man, the pleasure was all mine, man. This was great.
Thank you, Zach and MVP. I assure you, this story of the two of them is not completely told yet. We will be doing more and more and more and more with these two people in the future, I assure you. But that is enough for now. Oh my gosh, was that great. Well, how do you possibly maintain after something so awesome? I'll tell you how we do it. Here on Turn Out of Punk, next week, I am joined by someone that I've been hoping to have on for a super long time. Finally made it happen, and he is an incredible guest. Next week on the show, I am joined by Jeff Rickley of the band Thursday, of United Nations, and it is an incredible episode. Oh my gosh. There is, I don't know, I
I was found out stuff about Jeff that I had no clue about, and it has blown my mind wide open. We don't get very far into his journey, but as far as we get, the getting is good. So everyone, please join me next week on the show with Jeff and I having a cool conversation. Once again, though, if you would like to support this show, please go to iTunes, subscribe to it, write a review, rate it, tell all your friends about it. If you want to get in touch with us, go to facebook.com, look up Turned Out a Punk, hit me up on social media, at Left for Damien. You can also check out the other podcast, Turned Out a Punk Footnotes. There's a very active mailbag on that. Send your mail into them. God, I got to go watch this Ascendant sound check. You know, like they do these old punk covers. They're awesome. So I'm going to let everyone go. Until next week, go out there and make your own culture. And how cool is this? Thank you, everyone. Bye.